Pull up a chair. I want to tell you about an airplane that spent half a century buried under a glacier and then flew again. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Taildragger, and this is the hangar where we don't just look at airplanes behind velvet ropes. We tell you how they got there, and every once in a while, one of them has a story so unlikely that, if you put it in a movie, folks would say it was too far-fetched. This is one of those, so settle in. Before we get rolling, today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. Your first solo, your private, your instrument rating, all the way up the ladder. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it, and every coin tells a story, which if you think about it, is the whole point of this show. Go take a look at aviationsoul.com. Now, let me set the scene. It's July of 1942. The war is young and it's ugly, and Britain is hungry for airplanes. The problem is the Atlantic. It's a long way across that water, and hauling fighters over on ships means submarines get a vote. So somebody had a better idea. Fly them across. Not straight across, mind you. You didn't have the legs for that in a fighter. You went the northern way, up through Labrador, over to Greenland, onto Iceland, then down into Scotland, island hopping across the top of the world, following the shortest line the globe would give you. They called it the snowball route. On this particular run, you had a flight of 8 airplanes, 6 P-38, Lightnings and 2 B-17, Flying Fortresses. The Lightnings were the little brothers here. Twin-engine fighters, that unmistakable twin boom shape, a pod in the middle for the pilot, fast, beautiful, but short-legged over open ocean. So, the plan was for the two big fortresses to lead to navigate, and for the little fighters to tuck in and follow them across the empty gray water, like ducklings behind their mother. Now, here's where it gets interesting. They launched from Greenland, heading for Iceland, and the weather, which up in that part of the world doesn't ask your permission, closed in around them. Ceilings dropped, the horizon disappeared into that flat white nothing, where the sea and the sky become the same color and your eyes just quit giving you honest answers. On top of that, the Germans had a weather station broadcasting false readings to foul up exactly these kinds of crossings. Iceland was socked in, they couldn't get down, so they turned back for Greenland. And Greenland was worse. Fuel's burning, everybody knows the math. The math doesn't care how brave you are. And the flight leader made the only call a leader could make. He put them all down on the ice cap. Belly landings on a glacier in the middle of nowhere. Picture that for a second. You're a young man, maybe 22 years old, and you're greasing a multi-ton airplane onto a sheet of ice you cannot see the edge of, with your gear up, hoping the surface underneath that snow is smooth and not a crevasse that'll swallow you whole. One of those Lightning pilots, a fella named Brad McManus, put his down with the wheels first, and the airplane flipped right over onto its back. He was hanging there upside down in the cockpit, and he lived to tell about it. All 8 airplanes went down on that ice. 6 Lightnings, 2 Fortresses. And here's the part that matters. Every single man walked away. 25 airmen, not one of them killed in the landings. They set up on the ice and they waited, and the cold came down on them. And for 9 days they lived out there on that glacier while rescue got sorted out. Eventually, a fella came out on a dog sled and they got everybody out. Every one of them home safe. The airplanes, though, the airplanes stayed. Now at the time, nobody thought much about it. There was a war on. You don't go back for 8 belly-landed airplanes on a glacier when you've got a whole world on fire. They figured, well, they're sitting right there on top of the ice. Somebody'll grab them someday. Maybe after the war, easy pickings. They were wrong about that, because Greenland does something to things you leave on it.
It snows. And that snow doesn't melt. It packs down, year after year, and it turns to ice, and the whole glacier is slowly flowing and building, and anything sitting on the surface starts to sink. Not fast. But it never stops. Every year, a little deeper, a little more snow on top, a little more ice. They became known as the Lost Squadron, and for decades people wondered, could you find them? Could you get one out? A P-38 Lightning is a rare bird now. There aren't many left in the world, and here were 6 of them, frozen in time, theoretically perfect, right where the boys left them. The trouble was nobody knew how deep folks went looking in the 1970s and 80s. Expeditions, they'd get out on the ice roughly where the airplane should be, and they'd search and they'd come home empty. The glacier had moved. The airplanes weren't where anybody remembered. They'd drifted with the ice and they'd sunk down into it, and the surface up top had changed completely. Then finally, one group got serious. They brought radar. Ground-penetrating radar, the kind that can see down through the ice. And they went hunting, and they found them. Not 30 feet down, not 100 feet down. 268 feet down. Let that number sit with you for a second. That's deeper than a football field is long straight down into a glacier. In the 50 years since those boys walked away, the ice had piled up over the top of them until they were buried under the length of a 268-foot column of solid glacier. Now most sane people would look at that number and go home. These folks did not go home. The question was, how in the world do you get a fighter plane out from under 268 feet of ice without tearing it to pieces? You can't dig it, you can't blast it. So they came up with a machine, a hot water drill, a device that pumps heated water down and melts a shaft straight down through the glacier. They called it the Gopher, and it bored a hole about 4 feet across, straight down 268 feet, until it reached the airplane. And then they had a person go down that hole.
Down a 4-foot ice shaft, 268 feet into a glacier, to reach an airplane that had been sitting there since the Roosevelt administration. They picked one of the six Lightnings, and when they got down there and got a look at her, the news was mixed. All those years, all that pressure, the weight of 268 feet of ice bearing down had crushed and folded parts of that airplane. The tail booms were bent. The center section was mashed. She was not going to just get dusted off and rolled out of a hangar, so they did something even crazier. They melted a cavern down there. Underneath the ice, they used that hot water rig to open up a room around the airplane, 260 feet below the surface, and men worked down in that ice cave, taking a P-38 Lightning apart piece by piece. In the cold and the dark and a bubble melted into a glacier, they disassembled her, and they hoisted the pieces up that shaft to the daylight, one at a time. That was 1992, 50 years almost to the month after she went down. They brought her home to Kentucky, to Middlesboro, and a whole crew of people set out to do the thing that most folks said couldn't be done. Not just save her, not just hang her from a museum ceiling with the dents still in her, make her fly. And I want you to understand what that means, because I've been around restorations my whole life, and this one is in a class by itself. This wasn't an airplane with some corrosion and a tired engine. This was an airplane that had been squeezed by a glacier. Roughly 80% of what came out of that ice, they were able to use the rest they had to remake by hand to the original drawings. The Allison engines, the turbochargers, the booms, thousands upon thousands of hours, volunteers and craftsmen bending metal and chasing parts and refusing to quit, year after year after year. They named her Glacier Girl, and on a day in October of 2002, 10 years of work after she came up out of the ice, and 60 years after 25 young men walked away from her on a glacier, Glacier Girl started her engines.
Two Allison V-12s, that deep, hard, throaty sound a Lightning makes. And she rolled down the runway, and she lifted off, and she flew. I've talked to people who were there that day, and grown men who've seen everything aviation has to offer stood on that ramp and cried, because it wasn't supposed to be possible. You do not get an airplane back from 268 feet of glacier. The ice keeps what the ice takes, everybody knows that, except this time it didn't. Now here's the thing I want you to take home from all this, and it's the reason I love the museum airplanes and the restoration crews more than just about anything in this business. Glacier Girl is not a fighter that shot down a bunch of enemy airplanes. She never fired a shot in anger. She never made it to the war. Her whole combat record is one belly landing on an ice cap on the way to a fight she never reached. By the cold arithmetic of history, she's a footnote, an airplane that didn't make it across. But go stand in front of her today. That polished aluminum, those twin booms, and what you're really looking at is not the airplane. It's the people, it's 25 kids who put 8 airplanes down on a glacier without losing a soul. It's the pilot hanging upside down in his cockpit who lived. It's the dog sled that came for them. And it's 50 years later, a bunch of stubborn Americans who looked at the number 268 feet and said, "We're going down there anyway." That's what these old airplanes are. They're not machines. They're the last physical proof that certain people on certain days refused to accept what everybody else called impossible, first when they were flying them. And again, a lifetime later when they were digging them back out, back when Avgis was cheap and airspace was free, we used to say an airplane was only as good as the folks who kept her flying. Glacier Girl proves it in a way nothing else on this earth can. She sat under a glacier for half a century, and people loved her back into the sky.
The bones of this story I owe to the men of the Lost Squadron themselves, whose accounts survived, and to the recovery and restoration teams who documented every foot of that ice shaft and every rivet of that rebuild. If you want to lose an afternoon in the best possible way, go read about it, and go see her if you ever get the chance. You can find us anytime at RadioHangar.com. The ice kept her for 50 years. It didn't get to keep her forever. I'll leave you with that one. This is Tail Dragger, and I'll see you back here in the hangar.